Hello, here's Andy, and I'm here with Ganga Mira for Here Now TV. Is that right, Ganga Mira?
Everybody calls me Ganga, but for the sake of clarity with names, I was called before Mira, so it's Ganga Mira.
Okay, so
officially, but otherwise it's Ganga.
Okay, so there are more than one Gangas.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, nice to see you. You give satsang. Can you explain to me what your talks are about?
Ah, it's about those who search themselves. What a very funny sentence, isn't it? So they want to realize or to know what is the reality, as probably they found out by their experiences that still they are never satisfied or they feel a kind of loss deeply in themselves. So satsang is to point out to what they are, what one is in reality, the true nature of things, as it is always there, but it looks it's veiled by our experiences that we believe they are real.
So
a full program.
So like we have a kind of a view of reality that isn't quite true, and because of that people get confused.
Exactly, yeah. When people get confused because they think they are this or that.
Hmm.
And they search always, everybody searches happiness or love or whatever big name is there as a goal. And they may have taste of it, but it always fades away.
Mm-hmm.
It's never permanent. So there is a frustration, very deep, or an absurdity that they may feel. So satsang points out that will always be with experiences, with trying to find all the permanent solution in this world. So just keep quiet where you always are, in fact, to realize that you are not what you see, or you are not what you feel, or know, or experience.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you say are we then, if we're not what we see and not what we feel?
It's just an appearance of oneself, but it's not real. It's not because it appears that it's real. Reality, we can say as a definition that it's something which is always there now.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot say that with experiences of life. They go on changing.
Yes.
They go on changing.
Yeah.
So it's the seer who is permanently there, if you say in words. It's the self. What's there in the background of all things. But it cannot be objectified. What is objectified is a seeming reality.
Okay. And so everything is flowing, and you say the seer is not flowing, it's not coming and going?
The seer is not coming and going, that's right.
But is the seer apart from the seeing?
You see, the one who seeks, or what we think of ourselves, it's like, I am such and such, and one refers always to the body and to the mind. It's a very common sense.
Yes.
Okay. So that brings the life, the flow of life. And to search something more, some people are quite, they don't question, so they have their life like this. But some start to question, but what could it be that in this life we can never be satisfied, even though they may have moments of quietness, moments of real happiness, but they are moments.
Well, maybe because what about the idea, maybe because everything is always changing, but people cling to something they can hold on to.
Yeah.
Like they think, I'm a fixed thing.
Yeah.
So, and everything else is a fixed thing, so I can make myself happy with another fixed thing. But it's not.
But it's not like that.
It will be like sand through the hands.
Yeah.
Like when a kid gets a toy, it is, oh yes, great, and two days later is like not interesting anymore.
Exactly, this is the thing.
Yeah.
So the wise men, it's long ago they speak, and what they say that we will never get real happiness, means everlasting happiness, but happiness, you see, we have a concept of it. Let's say tranquility. We will never be at peace if you don't realize what is the background which allows this appearance. Mm-hmm. And this background is ourselves, is what we really are. So in that way we cannot experience it.
Yeah.
We just have to surrender the mind to it, not to be hypnotized again by what the mind or the body presents. So a life, the apparent life, reality, goes on flowing, the same, exactly the same.
Yeah.
You see, even this identification, same, it will appear, disappear, go on changing. But at least when the self is realized, one doesn't enter into confusion. The confusion is dissolved. That's all about.
So there's no clinging to, anymore. So that you say, oh, I will get happy finally by any of the appearances.
That's seen as illusory.
It will never make you happy if you try to find something steady in the appearances. Well, can you talk a bit about your story, like your seeker story? It may be just a story, but you know, people love to hear those stories.
It can be inspiring sometimes, or funny. Well, I will make it short. I was a seeker from young age, and as I had a artistic context in my family, I thought it was through art that I will get something else. I was really after something else than what was presented, though I had a very happy childhood. But it was not enough. So I was getting probably some moments of ecstatic moments with art. I was painting or reading poems. Till I had a drama for me. I was living in Africa all my childhood, my 13 first years. And because of the independence, we had to come back to Belgium very quick, in one night actually. Leaving everything else behind means my paradise was behind. And the loss of this paradise, though I was already searching, made the seeking very conscious. I could not be at peace inside, though I was not showing it much. And I started to have the luck, I think, to have Qian text, Qian poetries, and stories of masters, disciples, and I loved it. I loved it. So I can say that my background has this foundation, a bit of this Qian atmosphere, and the Qian paintings were inspiring me a lot. Till I finished my school and I went to the university, and there was this big revolution starting with the beatniks and then later the hippies of peace, love, you can try everything through experiences of So I went into it fully. There was, it was really like a very chaotic time in the university with my friends, the exploring so many things on so many levels.
Oh, it was also thrilling, I guess. Exciting, you know.
It was very exciting, but every time I think it added to my despair. Because I was always left where I started. Because I had hopes, probably, to find something in any means, by any means.
Yeah.
And in the end, I was always left with myself, the one I thought I was.
Yeah, but yet this is what people tell you. You have to become someone. You have to find yourself. And when you try and you don't really yourself...
Then there is no exit. Huh?
Yes.
And the despair became so, so deep that I felt, well, now here I am. And so there is... Or I finish my life, or I find a master to help me. Because I had that background in me. And so I thought, well, the Buddhas or Socrates... Ah, yeah, because... Okay, I forgot a very important event. I had to pass my examen of philosophy.
Oh.
And I knew it already, but I read Gnoti Seoton in my course, which means know yourself. And it jumped.
I just have to ask you not to put too much pressure on the tail because it will shake a bit. And for one who is later watching the video, the shake will be quite enormous. Okay. I forgot to tell you, sorry.
Okay, no. It jumped in my heart. And I asked the question, do I know myself? And it was, well, no. So immediately I took the decision to find a living Socrates. And if not, a Buddha who was looking to say the same thing. And so I decided to leave, and in 3 days I made my bag with onions, bread, and a bottle of wine, knowing that one can survive well like this. And I was on the road, first to Greece to find Socrates, that I didn't find, and I went immediately to the Himalayas, where I thought the wise men, I think they live there. So I was put at the bank of the Ganga very quickly. And then started then the search in that direction.
Okay. And then? Was there more?
Then I... First, I was alone, living like a monk life, very simple. And I went to hear here and there a few yogis or some people who looked like knowing more than myself. And so I felt that everybody has such a conviction telling what's the truth, and I felt the directions they were giving to me were or on the right or on the left or up or down. And then where? I was confused where to go then. I was really confused because the way they gave meditation were bringing me always in some other direction. So what was the right one? I was totally confused. So I decided to leave everything and everybody behind, and I went to a cave to be by myself and just whatever, just meditate and see what was coming. And that's how my visa was finishing, was over. I had only 1 rupee at the time left, so I knew I didn't find the master I wanted to find, so I had to stay in India there, and then I went to spend my last very delicious tea in a very small shop near the Ganga. And one book of Kabir, the poet, was accompanying me. So I sat, it was evening, and a man came to me. He was standing asking, "What can I help you, my dear child?" he said. And I had enough with help. I was still in that mood. I said, "No, thank you very much." And he said, "But if you need, I'm sitting every day at 5 at the bank of the Ganga." He showed me where. And I said, "Thank you very much." Sure that I will not go. So I went back to the cave. I started my sadhu life, which is the simple life of a spiritual seeker. And so it means I went to ashram, to the monasteries, to have food, as all those, and did my life normal, Ganga, the bath, washing clothes, and meditating, that was it. And in the night I went back to the cave, and there in my sleep there was, I must say, a vision, because it was more alive than a dream, with the face I saw, and then I heard, who knows, maybe it is him you search. So I didn't sleep to be at 5 at the bank where he showed me. I was then, was sitting there. And when I came, he laughed. A big laughter. A big laughter. Marvelous. And I sat in front of him. The Ganga was flowing in front of me.
Nice.
And then he said, "What do you want?" I said, "Cosmic consciousness." "But if you know more, I want that more." Because I knew the mind is limited, so what can he say? And says, "Very good. And what do you do for that?" "I meditate." "Show me." And I close my eyes. Of course, I don't know how long, but I know that when I opened them, I looked at the Ganga flowing, at the sky, remember a bird pass, at this man. "Oh, Master, it's so simple." So by his presence, he just fulfilled what I just asked for. And I prostrated, because I had this background, I read the prostrate, you know, with the Master. And after that, I say, "Oh, Master, I found you, and I know you. I feel I know you since so long." And then he looked at me, and then he said, "Now you go." "Oh, no, it's not possible. I just found you. You go. When you will need me, I will come." So I left, at the same time in great ecstasy, at the same time totally puzzled, because I was left alone again. But I went towards the cave and was kissing the trees, and I was a bit off, I don't know how you say that. I knew nothing from that man, nothing. There was no special appearance. He was wearing white dhoti, white shirt, white towel on his head, like many, many Indians then. It was December, and I knew nothing about him, no name, nothing. Anyway, so when I went back to the cave, I said, "I have to see that man again. It's not possible. I need help." And so what was in common? The place where we met. So I decided to be at that spot, and I would say, stay there as long as needed, means till he comes back. So that's what I did, and for 8 months I remained there. I was, I think, put in a kind of samadhi, means a deep kind of meditative mood. So I could stay there, no problem. It was my life, meditating, going in the Ganga, washing clothes, and searching the food, but I was not even very aware of all that. And finally, even the people of the village were putting food to me.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I know.
Friendly.
Yeah, really. And 8 months later, it was evening time. I don't know why, I looked behind and I saw the same man coming to me.
Mm.
My master came back. And so from then, he visited me at 4 with food. And 2 people told him, don't approach that saint, they were calling me. She's Mira, she's like Mira. She came from the West and she left all her comforts for God. Don't touch her, don't trouble her, we give her food. And then he said, but I am her guru. Oh, and they started to bow down to him.
What did you say? I am?
I am her guru.
I'm her guru.
Said,
oh, so,
yeah,
the
master.
Okay.
And then they started to bow down to him, because in India it means that when you meet a guru. And then so he visited me where I could ask questions and or nothing and eat his food. I was so thankful. And
so sometimes you just enjoyed this company without questions. Sometimes
oh, yeah.
you had questions.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That presence was the top of my desire.
Nice.
Yes, yes. Very nice. And so after I think 2-3 weeks, one day he woke me up very early, it was 5, and said, today we work together. And from that time, we were together all day.
Hmm.
That was lovely.
Great, okay. What's that?
So,
Papaji?
Yes,
ah,
Papaji!
Okay.
Yes. So, I didn't need to search somewhere else. It was quite enough.
So, so many people came to Papaji, and Papaji
yeah.
came to you.
Yeah, that's what he was always telling. Never forget I came to you.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful story. It yeah. saved my life, you know.
Yeah.
He saved my life. And today, is still very absolutely alive, because this life gets magical only because of that meeting.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's also nice to hear that he was also a friend.
Oh.
Because I hear through your words he was more than just a guru.
Yes, yes. He was all. He was all for me. And of course that is also the story in the story, but it was never... I never forgot that he was first my master.
Uh-huh.
And living together, naturally, I became his wife, we had a child. It was very, very beautiful. It was like golden days, you see. But
really?
There was no separation. It would have been absurd for me to say he's my husband. He was my master. Those things happened. And that was very harmonious.
I see. So... Some people, when they think I search fulfillment,
yeah.
and they hear the stories, you're everything to me. They think, yes, I just need to find the love of my life. And then two
mm-hmm.
people who are both seeking meet, and they
yeah.
get married. And one year later, the person who made me so happy is the person who made me so unhappy. You see that? It's like if two poor poor people marry and then try to grab into each other's pocket to get, and then at first it seems they get something, but then they both have empty pockets. So.
But this is it. You see, it because he was my master. He was always throwing back to the real source of happiness, if you
yeah,
want to say.
Yes.
That was the very extraordinary meeting,
hmm.
which was permanently there, only
hmm.
by his presence, silence. He was very silent, or even the words he could tell. whatever activities we had, it was like satsang.
Oh, you see,
it was no separation with him. You make tea, you buy potatoes in the market, or you just walk like meditatively, or you just enjoy the sight of the Ganga. There was no sense of separation. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a beautiful story.
Yes,
I shall say. And to maybe finish the story a little bit, how came that you became yourself a guru, so to speak?
So there was no idea in me to become a guru, at least not consciously. You know, very strangely, I have to say, even being at the perfect place, being very fiery to realize the self, it's only, so I met Papaji in 1968, and it's only, I remember very well, in 1987 that obviously my search dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I was a slow student, I have to say, so nobody has to copy me. But I speak of my story. So,
sure.
In 87, my search dropped. So, for some reason, I confused a bit. It looks like it is that. But I was keeping quiet because I knew that pride will not do. But I was quite convinced I am now at the right place. But I was keeping quiet. And I always kept contact with my master, even though I was in the West for since long time already, visiting him only every 3 years because I didn't have money. But our contact was so close by letters and by the heart that I never felt this big distance. And it's only when he left the body, suddenly a huge doubt came to me. And what if I never heard what he told me? It was absolutely dramatic.
Oh.
So I felt it is going to die, he's dying now. I had that urgency that I can never trust somebody else.
Oh.
So I have to hear what he tried to tell me all this time.
So you were afraid that with him, the stuff that he told you died away too, that it would like...
Yeah, because I had a doubt, so it means I still felt suddenly I didn't hear at all what he told me.
Oh.
All those years, I fooled myself. But it was quick, you know, it was quick, it was in time, but very intense.
Huh.
So I sat, I was alone on my bed in Brussels. I sat on my bed, tried to quieten, to just to hear what he told me. And a sentence came, don't land anywhere.
Mm.
So I didn't land on that dot. And suddenly, this question I never asked myself, will you believe, became so alive. Who am I? And somehow the concept of I disappeared radically.
Didn't he ask you to ask yourself the question?
I have no idea, but I don't think so.
Okay.
He told me everything to root out this I, but the question I never used.
Okay. Okay,
so... Once it happened as an event, I can tell in time.
Yeah.
It's the moment of his dying. That was it. And curiously, I kept quiet for 2 months, I think, and then somebody from Amsterdam invited me because the ashes of Papaji were given to the friends, to the disciples. And he said, there will be a little ritual with 10 people and you will have some ashes if you like, you come. So I said, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there in Amsterdam and there was among the people I knew One I didn't know was a psychiatrist from Romania, settled in Amsterdam, and she found that it looked that I had an interesting story with the master, so she wanted to know more and asked me if she could come the next weekend to Brussels to hear my story. And I don't know why I said yes. And then she proposed, after hearing me, look, my dream was that my house serves a high purpose. And so I always try to invite people or do something beautiful there, but I would be very fulfilled if you give that sound in my house. Will you? And said yes. And then suddenly I felt, oh, what do I say? But I let it go. And so she took her agenda, and that was it.
And then you immediately started?
Then on the 4th of January, those dates I remember, of 1998, I went to her house and there were like 15 people. And for the first time, so I was giving official satsang with friends and with question answer. And I found it very natural in a way. Very natural.
Nice.
Yeah. Quickly, I was regularly invited there, and quickly it became a bit too many people. So a Buddhist school offered a big place, and suddenly I was thrown on a stage with something like 200 people.
What?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh my.
when there was somebody asking a question, I put a chair near me because I could not see the face.
Yes.
So I was one-on-one, because this is very important, you know. Satsang is really one-on-one. It's not a general talk, actually, even though everybody can catch something from the talk I have with somebody. It makes ricochet, how you call it. You know, like you put a stone and then it goes...
Ben, yes.
Yeah. And... So it was all right, and so people started to invite me all over the places. And at that time, my daughter was not there, I had nothing to do, and I loved to share that, you know, for those who are thirsty for it. So I did travel a lot that time. I had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And up to... One day, I felt I give a stop. It may be enough. Because I felt, it starts to be a big thing. You know, this guru thing. And it was not my cup of tea to be a big guru.
Yeah, yes. You don't want it to be a star.
No. I love more the subject than... Yes. To become again something.
Yeah. Surely I understand that. It's not easy to lead a quiet life this way. Yeah, okay, so let's talk about what you're actually talking about again. So I heard you say sometimes you refer to it as that you speak of what cannot be spoken of. You speak about what cannot be spoken of.
That's right, yeah.
Why would you say can't be spoken of,
okay,
actually?
That's a good question. It can be expressed, because I say it's not this, for example, or it's not that, or keep quiet now means don't grasp. So, you see, if you are a seeker, the first confusion is to believe you are a seeker, that you are somebody.
Yeah.
Seeking. So that concept has to be rooted out, and that you can express very well. To root out. You cannot express what is always there and which can never be caught by the mind or by the body. So satsang is to just throw back where someone is always anyway.
So even calling it the self is kind of just a hint.
It's just a
hint. It's like the finger that points to the moon, but it's not the moon.
Right.
It's actually everything. It's the moon and the finger and... Yeah, the words just... You can cut out of the words.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good, yeah.
So, and if you try to talk about it, you say, then you can only say, like, neti, neti, not this, not that, but...
Not that. And that's why you see satsang is for those who have this desire to, for freedom. It's also expressions. To be themselves, even if though they are, but they don't believe it, because they believe their mind. So the words are to root out the concepts. It's impossible, it would be wrong to say this experience is the proof that you are it. That would be very wrong, you see. Whatever you can describe is surely not it. It's a beautiful direct expression, of course, of a wave, but it's an appearance. It belongs then to somebody who has got that experience again.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be a nice hint at best.
Yeah. Right.
So that means... trying to define what you are is actually impossible, especially by words.
It's impossible and it's wrong, because it would mean that one thinks he can figure it out. You know? And the mind only can figure it out things, but it's limited, because the mind itself disappears from where it comes from.
Yeah.
Or where he appears.
It would be something you could grasp. People are looking for something to grasp.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
But that's the problem.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If one could simply hear that, you know, that's it. It would be relieved.
Yes. That sounds so easy, but... Yeah,
because of habits. Because we swallow too many convictions, you know, and ideas. And otherwise, it's... More than easy, because you are it already.
I mean, life starts this way. It starts
life
with ideas. I mean, life, like the person, character life starts with this is this, this is that, you are this, you are that, and you should be this and not that.
And it would be a trouble then who is born doesn't have a strong personality. You see, you need, it looks like, first to really be okay with I as an individual, to maybe be invaded by this question, but what is it actually?
So It is a little bit hard, because also parents often want their children to be something in particular that is mostly also fulfills the expectations of what they should be, and I think it's something. If I see parents, I often wonder how that they don't look what. What is she expressing? What can she do? What does she like and stuff? It's mostly you should do this. What I think is right. Step. Yeah.
I know.
It's not easy. It's no wonder that many people get
confused and feel
bad.
Yes,
not enough.
Of course. Yes, I understand that.
Yeah. So you told me that you meditated now. I think the subject meditation is very interesting. What do you think about meditation? Do you think it can be helpful in some way to see this, what you're talking about?
Well, I think that we definitively need gaps in this mind to maybe listen to some real deep desire to know more what's real, or to be able to be open to one's own heart, or you know. So some people, they get it through the nature and they feel very happy. There is a gap, there is a kind of no mind. Some people need practice of meditation who promise a state of no mind, even if they say sometimes it leads to enlightenment. There I don't agree. But it's a kind of blessing, I would say, or luck, to have sometime a stop. Because then, you know, things have time to rest a bit at their proper place, and you may dedicate then to a very meaningful question or experience, which may bring you to satsang or to the text who speak of the self, that actually happiness or peace is when you just keep quiet in your own reality, which cannot be objectified. But I would not myself, for those who come to satsang, they come maybe because of a long practice, I would not advise to meditate, because you see, one trouble with meditation is that there is a meditator. And so what? Do you have any way to question that?
Yeah, and
you know,
people think they can use meditation to get somewhere.
It's important. Yeah, you will get somewhere, but really away from where they are. So,
I mean, they think they're trying to reach something which is then hints away from what it already is.
Yes, it's an utopia. You see those rules and those. It's an utopia. It's rather feeding the mind. Feeding it, entertaining it, rather than to keep quiet or just give up concepts.
Okay, well, what would you say to someone who suffers under bullying? You know, there are people who are maybe very, very, very afraid and very sad because they get laughed at and get bullied at and want to take their lives because they think what the others say is true and I'm unworthy. Did you have ever such people like that? Who
many people come to satsang with, because they are miserable with something of the life, of course. You see, I try to clarify to them that they speak of happenings to their body and mind. That maybe what happens to the body-mind is not really who they are. And if they go back to the source of this I as an identity, they may have a relief for even a split second, and they would like then to go to that direction again.
Oh, this is grasping again,
You see that? So,
a wonderful experience, and then you want to go back to this experience again.
Yeah, but the experience to go back to the source, if you keep quiet, when I disappears, is no more an experience. You are left where it is.
Yeah, sure. For some people, they distinguish at first and say, oh, now I'm not this, but I was there, because they think there's an I who was had that experience, but it was more like that, but the I comes back and thinks, that's the problem, and then
that
it wants to grasp again.
Generally, that's why you need a solid background of clarity in your mind, you see.
Yeah.
That's very important. Otherwise, I know many people who, out of the blue, they realized. They say so. It's their experience.
It happens, yeah.
And, but often, with time, that experience fades away unless they don't want to see that and they will live on their memory. Because a solid background of clarity is not there. Whatever you grasp, even if you start to describe what is true, is mind. So that background has to be unshakable, you see, That makes the radicality of realization. Otherwise, people will speak, it comes and goes.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't live from memory by their own will, by their own doing. It's just it happens this way. That's the way they are expressed by the self. Then, let me take a look at my questions. Is great suffering required to awaken? I think you already touched that subject by saying that sometimes awakening just happens out of the blue. But for some people like Eckhart Tolle or Byron Katie and so
most
on...
Most of the people.
There's a really, really, really great suffering, like tremendous suffering.
Most of the people. And that's why, you see, I have this experience. When I go to places where people are too comfortable, in too beautiful environment, there is less burning thirst for freedom.
Huh?
It's very interesting to see.
Less?
Yes.
Less interest for freedom? Yes. When
because when the life is too beautiful, why should they search? They are quite comfortable. It's my experience.
Okay.
There are always exceptions, huh? Speak
interesting. Well, because I have friends who are like in India, where they went, people seem to be much happier because they don't have everything, and then say, okay, now what to do with life? I have everything, and it doesn't fulfill me anyway. So in India, there are some, they don't have everything, but they have to work and stuff, and they're already fulfilled.
Yeah. But I say there are exceptions. Buddha, you see, in the history, it's said like this, but we find it today, same thing. People have everything, and yet something of that search can rise. But there are not so many like that. Generally, it is through suffering.
Okay. Okay. Is that of concern for you, that people who live in a beautiful environment are not interested in searching?
Oh, but good for them. I mean, if they are happy like this, it's good.
So you're not trying to convince them to go into satsang or so, if they're not interested?
Oh, no.
No?
Then I have myself nice holidays and I don't need to speak. You see, satsang is created by the demand. It's not a mission or a course that you have to give.
Okay.
To my eyes.
So, is it possible? Do you have the experience that it is possible to enjoy concepts when they are seen as not real? You need a lot of concepts to understand and enjoy a movie or a book.
Oh, you can still enjoy, but you will never anymore confuse yourself for a concept. But one can enjoy, sure. But it will be also in time quite fed up of this enjoyment and just keep quiet in himself. Of course, you know, as long as this body-mind is alive, you have to spend your time in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, movies, for example, they live from characters and character development.
I find it funny. Yeah, interesting.
Can we talk about personal love? Like when two people fall in love with each other, I already touched that subject. So, is it still okay to say I love you so much even without a real personal eye? Like it's...
Why not? I mean, you see, it's a question of non-confusion. A body mind may be attracted by another body mind. Naturally, they can love each other, but they will not sell their soul for this love. It's there, it happens. It's not there, it happens too.
So it's maybe the same, just no clinging to the other one to be your solution or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, that is no more there. Those ideas are not there. they faded away. Yeah,
I think that's much more relaxed than. Oh. I guess maybe
it's peaceful.
Does the so is it a big? Do you think it is a problem if we have like two persons and one of them sees the self and realizes, oh, this is not who I am, mm-hmm. and the other one doesn't? Is that a big problem, do you think?
I can only express that with the testimony of my friends. Some friends, it is the case for some friends, and they manage. They have their kind of secret part. They love to go to satsang and not the other, but they still go along. Some people find it impossible. That is up to each one. Mm. I guess it's a generality, so there are exceptions. But I guess it's nice to have the company of those who love the same thing, who have the same passion. It's easier, probably.
Hmm.
But everything is possible.
So, you think? Do you think it is important to lose all concepts or and descriptions for human life? Do you think it is important to make this?
Not for human life.
To lose all the concepts?
In human life, you need to use concepts and, you know. But for those who want to know what's real, they have to reject everything. They have to give up their concept in order that what is always there reveals itself. Otherwise, if you grasp all the time the mind, the concepts, it looks like veiling it. And that's why there is a surge. But the life continues. And life is what? Experiences, concepts, whatever, you see. But it's no more a problem for the one who is freed from the belief, I am somebody. It's no, the problem is gone with the concept I am born is gone.
I mean, do you see it as kind of a life goal for human beings to realize the self?
Life goal? We cannot impose that. You see, it's impossible. I have beautiful neighbors. They are not occupied by this question, so they never come to satsang, which is just near. And somebody comes from China, because he has this question who made come. You cannot impose that. I know, even because of loving friends, you know, you want your friend to know the best you think for yourself, which is to, for example, realize what satsang points out. They bring their friends and it really works, because by themselves they didn't have that search. It's impossible to impose it. It comes to you, you don't know how. Yeah. But once it's there, you cannot suppress it also. So you have to solve that. It's a madness. But
yeah,
what to do?
I think it would, to impose it would also say you're dependent on me. I will impose it on you, and this would mean you aren't it. You know,
yeah.
You need me to be it. This, so making a religion out of it and wouldn't be a good idea.
Yes. Surely not.
But I sometimes have the impression that there are some people who have this non-duality concepts and make this a little bit into a religion of
but
some kind.
But they are wrong.
Yeah.
They are wrong. They love maybe. Maybe they want to fulfill an intention or a desire, but it's not like that.
No. Why do you think people need religions? Do you think they are good for anything?
You see, they have their purpose. I think it's a big support in the life of someone to have faith in something beyond them because they are at loss, and at least they don't commit suicide because they have some support bigger than themselves. Now, as everything is duality, religion have the dark side to have the tendency to be fanatic, and that is the dark side of the religion. But it has a nice side, as I said, if it is a support. People need, you know, they need support. Something, some faith in something. Otherwise, they are left absolutely alone in great despair. What to say? Some people replaced religion by therapy, maybe, but then their therapist becomes a very important support. Gurus can be a very important support, isn't it? A friend who you can trust fully also. But everything has its purpose in a way.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny. I know some people who call themselves atheists, like, yeah. I don't believe in God.
Yeah.
And they usually say, oh yeah, religions are not bad. People yeah. need to believe in something, then they have something they can cling to or so.
Yeah.
And they don't see that they themselves, their religion usually is science.
Yes. Exactly. yes, exactly.
I know. I just need to Google and then I know what it is. And it's, of course, another concept.
Absolutely. You demystified well.
Of course, when I talk to you, not when I talk to them, and I say, it's also, it's your religion, is like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
You argue cuckoo in the loco? It's the truth. Okay. So, what is your opinion on the concept of hope? Like, hope seems to be a concept where some people say hope is the utter rejection of what is, and some people say, well, it can be very useful, like the people who were in very bad situations, like the prisoners of the Nazis, they had hope, so it helped them to go on.
But you see, if you believe you are somebody, I think everybody lives on hopes. Hoping to have a nice job, hoping to be happy, hoping this and that.
Yeah.
I think when you become hopeless, then you may start to question what generally is not questioned, and you question values which are taken for granted. You question when you have no hope. Generally, people come to satsang when they are hopeless, helpless, hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
They tried quite enough for themselves and they don't know what to do, so it becomes urgent. Is there, if this works, otherwise it's over for me. You see, it's often that point, that urgency, that fire created to find an exit from the mind, but they don't know yet what it is, from where. So in satsang they will at least, it is said like that in satsang. It's because one is tyrannized by his mind.
What is devotion in through your words?
Yeah.
Is it important to be devoted to a teacher?
Yeah. You know, I started my search through my mind. So, but once you find your teacher, and means really the teacher where you will stop and learn, the experience is that he saved your life. So naturally, even if you are an intellectual, you are full of gratitude. I would say that devotion is gratitude to have met. Otherwise, today I can even say, if I didn't meet my master, what I would be today, you see? Miserable. So it goes together. You cannot remove one from your search, from your learning. No, the master, being freed from concept, he has always the natural duty to say, don't mistake, I may be your support in form and name now, but the master never dies. It is the pointing out which is the master.
Mm-hmm.
You see? But if you still need a support because you identify yourself as a body, then all the feet, it's an expression, an image, mm-hmm. of that one who throws you back to where you are. You see? That is beautiful and natural.
So, do you think it is important that the devotion to one's master gets dropped or loosens as well? Like, for some people, they cling to their master very much and it doesn't stop, and it's just, so the master becomes the image of what they are searching for. Do you know that?
Yes, of course, you know, it's unavoidable probably for many, but maybe it's better to love someone who doesn't bind you than somebody else. In that way. Because that love, that devotion, you see, removes other interests also, other illusions. So, nothing wrong, but of course the work is not over, because the image at some point will disappear. Because out of devotion, at some point, you may say, but what my beloved is saying after all, I don't care. Many don't care, you know, they just love the master.
Yeah.
But at some point, and especially when he dies, his body dies, then they say, but what he wanted to tell me, my beloved? And then they start to hear the teaching. And that's beautiful. So it was through devotion.
Oh, this is interesting. Because even just with normal parent and children relationship, I heard, like, my mother told me when her mother died that for the first time she saw that her mother was teaching her all the time, and suddenly she thought of stuff that her mother showed her, but she never saw that as a teaching, but it just came up. So even with easy things like how to cook this stuff and that, it just came up.
I know.
She felt lost at first, and then just being a housewife herself automatically was there.
Yes,
and her mother was very much alive in that.
This is it, you see.
That's beautiful.
So everything, if you approach a master, any relation you can have with him, he will anyway throw you back from where you are. And so I think it's quite a safe relation to... It's of course not a relation.
Yeah, okay. So then I guess if two people have a relationship and one of them has realized the self and the other one is just not expressed as interesting in asking who am I, then I think the master will also just support whatever the other one is like.
Of course. You see, Babaji
and
had a family before creating our family, an Indian family, not necessarily the kids or the wife appreciated or understood what he was pointing out, but it's the way it is, huh? And voilà.
Well, look, it expresses itself in many beautiful colors.
Yes.
So, can you talk about time? Like, time, is then a concept as well?
Time is a concept, sure. Time and space is a concept.
Because
it appears on what is. I mean, and when I say what is and what is and what is not, because we cannot describe what is.
So because it is very strong illusion, it seems magical. Like if I put a frozen pizza in the oven and I wait too long, then it gets burnt. If I put it out to too, as we say, too early, that it's still frozen also. Mm-hmm. So this illusion that it needs time to...
Yes, it. You see,
it's very strong.
Our first illusion is to think, I am born. I mean, for the mind, it's a scandalous. You cannot hear that. You cannot take it, the mind. Are you born?
Yeah.
He will freak out. He will tell so many myriads of arguments to tell that, of course, you are born.
Yeah.
So, in satsang, that's put into question. The reality of time and space.
Hmm.
And so that's why you need a very strong determination to free yourself from illusion, to be able to be attracted by this kind of unheard ideas. It's an idea, you are unborn, which removes the concept you are born. Now, of course, after that, who has the idea of even to be unborn? Because what is not even unborn. It is existence, it is emptiness, it is everything, and it is absolutely nothing. You see? So we cannot stop on any concept.
Oh, yeah.
But for the sake of teaching, if one cannot take at once, you are that itself, don't search. You see, that's possible. Some can take it that quickly. You have to give a bone to this mind to go back to the source of rising concepts, which is, are you born? Who are you? No. That this, will burn other concepts.
These first concepts,
yeah.
The sacred concepts. Yeah.
It is expressed anyway.
And then this is a wonderful pointer that you told me before from Papaji, like, don't rest anywhere.
Yes, don't rest anywhere. So who are you when you don't rest anywhere?
When many people try to use positive thinking to be happy, do you and try this to use as a technique?
Yes, like quite good for the life.
They listen to like MP3s who say, "Yes, you're good. You're worth something. You're enough."
You know, everybody finds some way to be more happy. It works for some people, something else will work for some people, but it all concerns the life of somebody. And in satsang, it's really a different direction. In satsang, you have a happy life or not. This is not the question. Who has this happy life or not? Who wants to be more happy? So the direction is completely different. One doesn't care anymore to have a happy life or not. He had enough and he wants to know who I am now. It's different, you see. Mm-hmm. But I have no judgment. I mean, I'm happy if this life is a bit more happy for people. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I wish so. I always start satsang, let there be peace and joy or love. It's a good wish for this world, you know. And some people are good at giving some solution, which are ephemeral maybe, but they are good at it. Let them do it. That's good. But I cannot do that job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just think that I'm running out of questions.
That's so nice.
So,
I thank you.
There are also questions which you already answered by answering one question. You already answered many questions, which is of course great. Maybe. This is one interesting question I have, and this is the... I only have two questions left, I guess. First question is, I heard you say you want people to realize that they are already themselves.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Nothing. Nothing.
Because some Nothing. People who consider themselves a person would maybe answer, I am already myself. This
you
is
know,
me.
But that's what I say. The satsang is like Chinese language, if you're not a Chinese, because it doesn't mean anything. But if you have this fire, or this warm in your heart, which troubles you about this deep feeling of anxiety or separation, it will mean something. Maybe you don't even understand, but you are a bit attracted. What does it mean? And those who don't have that, they say, what does it mean? And they just say, it's mad, it's nothing. It's,
yeah.
You know? That's why it cannot be imposed, the satsang. Mm. It's really a particular trouble which brings it.
Yeah. People just have to have this interest in exploring.
It looks like.
And, yeah.
It really looks like.
So, well, of course, it's also not true that they have to have this interest. For some people, it's just the realization just happens.
Oh,
yes.
I have a doubt here, but it's okay.
What? What's the doubt?
I somehow have not met yet those who have a spontaneous awakening. Maybe it's an awakening, but after a few months or a few years, I see that they make something out of it, and that is very suspicious. You can never make anything out of it.
You're making something out of it? Like, for example?
They make it uplifting. They make it anything of that spiritual stuff. Because the mind, they trusted an idea, to very genuine in the beginning maybe, to help the world or whatever. And they make it an idea, and they believe their mind again. And that is suspicious. That's all I have to say. I'm very radical, I tell you.
Well, then tell me, what is the mind?
It's a ghost. It's a ghost. If you believe in it, you are very much troubled. If you suddenly realize it's just nothing, it's a passing cloud, you are not troubled.
Yet, does it exist? Does something like the mind exist?
It doesn't. It appears so. It appears. Of course it appears. But it's not real. It's not real by nature. This is the main discovery, you know.
Okay. Then, well, if a good friend would ask you, like, desperately, in a very, very, very desperate, unhappy state, maybe even suicidal state, like, but he's trusting you, like, please, I want to be more happy, have a fulfilling life, please tell me what to do. Do you have any idea? You make the satsangs I heard, I don't know what this is, but...
Of course, I would say, oh, my dear child, quiet and down. Quiet and just ask, who is this bird? Who is this bird? And maybe just hugging for a while, or just show him it's not as dramatic as it seems. It works. I have a few like that. Or I show them that maybe they're not enough despair to take this path, this direction. And then they understand that they still want to enjoy this and that, and they are not as despair as they think.
Mm-hmm.
And I say then, and remember the day you are really despair, that this exists also. Come to satsang, welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds very kind and, and generous and comforting also. Comforting. Well, yeah, I think this was a wonderful interview.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very nice meeting you.
It was very nice, really, to meet you. Very.
I wish you a great stay here in Berlin, Ganga.
I wish to come back maybe a few days more. It would be lovely.
Yeah.
Another time.
Enjoy your stay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Ha 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 ha.